Well, it's great to follow Mark, who's done such fantastic work in the less than a year since UKRI has been officially formed. If it seems like it's been around forever, I think that's a tribute to Mark's leadership that has gone off to such a flying start. And it's wonderful to have this debate and discussion with my good friend and counterpart in the Welsh Government, Ken Skates. Ken and I collaborated very closely on the development of the industrial strategy. Before the white paper was produced, we had some really good roundtables and effective discussions in Wales together and with businesses and the research community and civic society in Wales. And what we have shaped in the industrial strategy is very much a reflection of those discussions. It's about the whole of the UK. It is to look to the long term and to look at our strengths as well as our opportunities. And I'm thrilled that as we are implementing it, as Ken has described, you see so much of this right across Wales, and it's good to see the momentum that's there. It's very nice to see so many familiar faces in the room tonight. Very grateful that you could come. We're talking about place, and I'd like to start with a famous figure from my home region, original home region of the Northeast. Chian Wura, one of my shadows, is here. She is the MP for Newcastle Central, and will also recognise the crucial importance of place throughout our industrial history. And I'd like to mention the example of George Stephenson. In 1825, as Stephenson was on the verge of a revolution in railway technology, he travelled, as I'm afraid he had to London, to answer questions before a parliamentary committee. Not much has changed there in the centuries. Of course, it was on his proposed Liverpool to Manchester line. Now, faced with George Stephenson, the father of the railway himself, you might have thought that the committee would have shown some enthusiasm for the project. Quite the contrary. Instead, the committee's lawyers subjected Stephenson to 3 days of intense questioning. I think some of the questioning that David, one of my distinguished predecessors, had during his time as a minister in front of select committees was grueling, but 3 days I think is pretty intense. How fast would the railway go? How would the pistons work? Would it go round corners? And if so, how? Would it scare the horses? What would happen if it hit a cow? They even had the temerity to mock his strong Geordie accent. One committee member asked if he was a foreigner, while another implied that he was mad. Indeed, at the end of the proceedings, the lawyer Edward Anderson declared Stephenson's plan to be, and I quote, "the most absurd scheme that ever entered into the head of a man to conceive." The bill was put to a vote, and Stephenson lost. Yet, as we all know, it was Stephenson who had the last laugh. His Stockton to Darlington line opened later that year. His Liverpool to Manchester line followed 5 years later. And the year after George Stephenson died, his son Robert was elected as a fellow of this esteemed institution in which we're gathered this evening. And so many of the stories of the fellows of the Royal Society didn't start here in London, but right across the United Kingdom. When James Watt had his eureka moment for a steam engine, with a separate condenser. It wasn't in St. James's Park down the Duke of York steps, but it was on Glasgow Green. When a 16-year-old James Chadwick accidentally joined the queue for the physics entrance exam instead of maths, which was his intended subject of examination, this moment would lead him to, after a series of years, to discover the neutron, and to win the Nobel Prize for Physics. It wasn't at UCL or Imperial, great institutions though they are, but at the University of Manchester. And while Ken was quite right to laud the achievements of the current Welsh Fellows of the Royal Society, this is nothing new, as he will know. Welsh Fellows of this great institution have been shaping our world for centuries. From Anglesey's William Jones, who 300 years ago first used the symbol for pi, to Swansea's Edward Bowen, who was instrumental in developing the radar that defended our shores during the Battle of Britain. Abadaz Dr. Lynn Evans, who just 10 years ago switched on the Large Hadron Collider for the very first time. So there can be no doubt whatsoever that for centuries, British innovation and ingenuity has been firmly rooted in our regions and our nations. Yet despite this, for too long, successive governments took the view of that parliamentary committee 200 years ago, dismissing too often the voices of Britain's regions and nations in favour of a London government, central government knows best. Now, growing up on Teesside, I saw this at first hand. I could see that since the foundation of the great industrial town of Middlesbrough, founded by the ironmasters, who didn't need to approach central London for permission to develop their industry and to lay out the town that Gladstone described as the infant Hercules. But during the period since its foundation, it was very evident that the ability to initiate and the ability to take decisions to shape the future of an area were increasingly had moved from the banks of the Tees to the banks of the Thames. And this was not, in my view, in the interests of Teesiders over those years. Because the decision makers didn't have the local knowledge to know exactly what was needed. And so during all my time in government, and indeed before that, I've used every position that I've had the privilege of occupying, whether it was Minister for Cities, Communities Secretary, Minister for Universities and Science, and now as the Secretary of State responsible for industrial strategy, to promote the devolution of decision making from here in SW1 to our great cities, towns, regions, and nations right across the UK. Indeed, one of my proudest moments as Communities Secretary was the signing of the Cardiff Capital Region City Deal, the largest deal agreed in any of the devolved nations. About £500 million from the UK government, £500 million from the Welsh government, and £120 million from local authorities. And when we launched our industrial strategy in November last year, we reached a landmark moment whereby every place in Wales and every person in Wales could benefit. This was the commitment that we made to a city or growth deal. And beyond the money and the resources, it's the convening power of these deals that really matters, bringing people together in all of the areas that contribute to success. Moving from a situation in which too often there were individual groups with individual interests to a greater sense of unity and common purpose with a clear vision for the future of their region, or in the case of Wales, their nation. It's not the government's job to tell places what they need or what they're good at. They know it, from my experience, better than anyone. But through our industrial strategy, we can work with them to help them build on their unique own strengths that they have. Now, as we know today, and Ken and Mark have alluded to this, there is not an industry in the world that is not being transformed by some of the forces that are really transforming whole economies and whole societies, whether that's artificial intelligence and the analysis of big data, whether it's clean growth, whether it's the changing pattern of mobility, or whether it's the aging society that almost every country on earth is experiencing. These are, you will recognize, the four grand challenges that we set out in our industrial strategy, very much advised by researchers, scientists, and thinkers in the sciences and the humanities and the arts right across the country, and are set out in our industrial strategy. Now, as Ken mentioned earlier, from automation to decarbonisation, many aspects of these grand challenges are reflected in and are resonant with the Welsh Government's Economic Action Plan. And I'd like to echo Ken's words that our commitment to grow the already significant strengths that Wales has in science and industry is a completely shared one. And indeed, on so many of these grand challenges, Britain's regions and nations like Wales are perfectly placed to be a leading force in the whole world. Now, of course, one man who understood this perfectly is your new chair, Lord Willetts, now here chairing this foundation, was again very instrumental in shaping the industrial strategy. But again, David draws on very strong regional roots. Those of us that know him well know that he is very proud of his Birmingham roots and is proud of his fellow Brummies over the years. One such, I might mention, Matthew Bolton, another fellow of the Royal Society. In the late 18th century, when James Watt offered Bolton the exclusive right to manufacture steam engines for the counties of Warwickshire, Staffordshire, and Derbyshire, Bolton replied, and I quote, "It would not be worth my while to make for three counties only, but I find it very well worthwhile to make for the whole world." And that should be the level of our ambition, it seems to me, making sure that we draw on the strengths of our places in this country and project them to the whole world. And today we're creating the technologies which the rest of the world will use tomorrow through, as Mark made reference to, the biggest increase in public investment in research and development in the history of the United Kingdom. And in so many exciting areas, the UK already has a deserved reputation for excellence. Take our first grand challenge, AI and the data-driven economy. I think Nick Jennings is with us here tonight from Imperial College, helped us launch at Imperial our £1 billion AI sector deal earlier this year. But our strengths are not just here in London. London is very important, and no one should take our enthusiasm for the whole of the United Kingdom as any intention to disrespect the contribution that London makes. Sometimes when people talk about London as if this were problematic, I reflect that this is a problem that any other country on earth would kill to have, the strength that we have in this capital. But let's just take the satellites that underpin the data-driven economy that is already spreading across the world, from the Internet of Things to autonomous vehicles. Stuart Martin from the Satellite Applications Catapult and Graham Turnock from the UK Space Industry Agency are both here tonight, and they will attest to the fact that 40% of all small communication satellites launched into space are designed and built today in Britain. Glasgow, for example, designs and builds more small satellites than any other city in Europe. Indeed, just 3 weeks ago, two pint-sized satellites made in Glasgow were launched into space. Monitoring the weather and combating climate change, these compact satellites have enormous potential to cut the costs of satellite launches and to encourage more companies to get into space. And while today the UK designs and builds satellites, from the 2020s, we want to design, build and launch them, becoming the first place in mainland Europe so to do. Through our industrial strategy, we're working with the Highlands and Islands Enterprise Board, backing the proposed spaceport in Sutherland, the north coast of Scotland, which I had the great pleasure of visiting in August this year. Local people pushing local strengths, creating hundreds of jobs there, highly skilled jobs in the far north of Scotland. Let me say something about our second grand challenge of clean growth, an area, a field in which Wales is leading the way. The Welsh Government's Economic Action Plan names decarbonisation as one of its calls to action, as Ken made mention. And across Wales, universities and firms have been answering that call for years now. Ken mentioned the work that's being done at Swansea University on so-called active buildings, which through new coatings, materials and renewable technologies are turning, as he put it, buildings into power stations. That's to say that they're producing more energy than they consume. And Swansea's initial research, as is so often the case with successful research and innovation, has started something of a snowball effect. Companies like Tata Steel and institutions like Cardiff University, both here today, joined them as partners, receiving seed funding from the Welsh Government. And earlier this year, through our Industrial Strategy Challenge Fund, we've awarded Swansea University over £30 million to develop further these technologies. In this area, Swansea is perhaps a decade ahead of anywhere else in the UK, with enormous potential to help us achieve the mission of our Clean Growth Grand Challenge, which is to halve the energy use of new buildings by 2030. Our third Grand Challenge is to make the UK a world leader in the future of mobility. Today, wings for nearly all Airbus aircraft, as Catherine no doubt will call attention to, are put together in Broughton in North Wales, at the largest single manufacturing site anywhere in the UK. And I'm delighted that Catherine, who again has been such a supporter and a shaper of the industrial strategy, is here with us and will be speaking in just a moment. Airbus are working with Siemens and Rolls-Royce, whose CTO, Paul Stein, is here this evening. I was talking to him earlier this evening, to help transform the future of flight. Through the industrial strategy, we're working with them to fund a demonstrator for hybrid electric propulsion for commercial aircraft, which will not only be cleaner, but quieter too. Earlier this month, we launched the aerospace sector deal, which includes £250 million, half by industry, half by the UK government, to develop our leadership in this area. It includes a new supply chains for the 21st century programme, providing bespoke training and better processes for over 70 small and medium-sized aerospace firms across the UK, reflecting, as Mark made mention of, the need to make sure that it is not just the firms, the big firms in the vanguard, but that small firms can participate in the diffusion of innovation. It's a massive opportunity for suppliers, especially in particular places like Wales and indeed the Southwest. And our final grand challenge is to meet the needs of an aging society. One of the facts that we researched, discovered in putting together the industrial strategy was that in the current British population, there are 15,000 of our fellow citizens who have reached their 100th birthday, who have become centenarians. Yet of all Brits alive today, not to be born in the future, but in the British population living today, 10 million of us can expect to live to the age of 100. A huge transformation in what we have come to expect during most of our lives. Now, our industrial strategy is helping our region seize this opportunity. And one way we're doing this is through the local industrial strategies that Mark Walport touched upon earlier. Let me take Greater Manchester, a place that already benefits from a historic health and social care devolution deal, one of the first devolution deals that I negotiated in the last Parliament. Earlier this year, Greater Manchester was named the UK's first age-friendly city region by the World Health Organization, and it's one of the biggest tech hubs, as many people know, outside London. Their local industrial strategy will combine these unique strengths to help people live better for longer. And so while the strategy itself is still being agreed, options under consideration, including a programme to set out ways in which people can live well at home for longer. A new model of independent living, making the most of new assisted living technologies. Other options include creating a test bed for products tailored to the area's growing population. And this will play a crucial role in achieving the mission, one of the missions of our Aging Society Grand Challenge, which is to make sure that people enjoy at least 5 extra healthy, independent years of life by 2035. Since we launched our industrial strategy just about this time last year, we've seen exciting new conversations taking place between central government and places right across the UK. In the West Midlands, the West Midlands Local Industrial Strategy, led by the mayor there, Andy Street, aims to make the region a world leader in electric and connected vehicles. While the Oxford Milton Keynes Cambridge corridor is looking at how a joint industrial strategy can harness the very evident scientific strengths that are there and are so well represented in this room. We want to agree these first local industrial strategies by March of next year, although I'm sure I remember that there will be lots of other things going on at this time. I think this will be one of the firm points that I will be looking forward to, as well as other significant events that March. And I hope in historic terms this will be regarded in the future as a competing landmark date. We're working with all of the mayoral combined authorities and the local enterprise partnerships to develop local industrial strategies. We are starting with the ones that I've mentioned, but we will be completing and continuing negotiations right across England, where we have local enterprise partnerships, and working with our colleagues in the Scottish and Welsh governments and with the Northern Ireland administration. So, ladies and gentlemen, even today, 200 years after Stevenson was mocked by that imperious parliamentary committee, there are still those who think that the great ideas that the UK has to offer exist only if they can present themselves in London before Parliament and before select committees and capital-based institutions. They could not be more wrong. From space to solar, from care to construction, we're building on the best of local strengths right across our United Kingdom. It's something to make sure that everyone, everywhere, can be proud of the contribution that we can make as a country, but including every individual place within that country over the years ahead. I'm thrilled that we have this subject for discussion and debate tonight. Thank you very much indeed to the Foundation for staging it, and thank you for inviting me to speak.